Welcome into this Golf Channel podcast presented by Top Golf. We're talking with the USGA's Director of Rules of Golf and Amateur Status, Craig Winter.
Craig, it was an eventful day for the USGA and the RNA. Just real quick, you sent out a new interpretation of the use of green reading materials. Can you kind of just initially walk me through the process of how the USGA and RNA got to the release that was sent out today?
Well, Rex, thanks first of all for having me on. Appreciate the opportunity to just discuss this a little bit more. This has been the finish of a process that's been going on for the past couple of years. We've been looking at these types of maps and trying to think about how they impact the game at all different levels. And this release was the end of a 6-week feedback period that we took the feedback, we listened to it, we got back together with our partners at the RNA and just what'd you hear from different sides of the Atlantic. And ultimately this was an attempt to continue to keep limits in place. We have been concerned about where this is going and wanting to make sure that reading a putting green is an essential skill of the game that's retained. And this is a simple, we believe, easy to understand and apply framework around green reading materials that doesn't affect the normal golfer in the way that it does affect professional side of the game that has quite a bit more resources to put towards this type of technology.
And I guess this goes to the fundamental reason of why the golf rulemakers, you and the RNA, decided to take a look at it, because this isn't something that your average amateur is going to deal with on a day-to-day basis. This is more about what you were seeing at the highest levels. Would that be correct?
Yeah, it is, Rex. And I'd say it's been starting to move into other sides of the game. And this was initially something that was reserved for very few professionals. You know, they had the access to the technology or they were keen on using it. And when they started seeing success with it, it started to move down into other levels of the game. Obviously, other fellow professionals, it's now something that's used in the college game. It didn't start there. It moved into that realm because there was a perceived benefit from it. And it started to show up at some clubs. You know, you think about a club that does host a competition that has this type of mapping available for professionals, that sometimes shows up in members' hands, and some of them like it, some of them don't have any idea how to use it. But ultimately, this is something about the game of golf that we just think needs to be protected. You need to be able to walk on a green, you need to be able to see it with your eyes, feel it with your feet, and figure out where that ball's going to roll without looking at a map, without looking at your electronic device to be able to solve that for you.
Now, I do want to get into some of the specifics about this interpretation, but I also want to get your ideas on, so there was a 6-week feedback period. How much feedback did you get? Where did it come from? I mean, was it caddies? Was it players? Was it tour administrators? And what was the general vibe that you heard back?
Yeah, all of the above, as well as some general golfers. There wasn't a tremendous amount of feedback from the general golf community because, again, as I mentioned, they're not using these materials at this time in any big numbers. But the general feedback was that we're not quite sure how we're going to be able to enforce what was actually proposed at the beginning. It was a more elegant solution, a bit more complicated, really more specifically targeted to have a greater effect on what was going on. This second chance at this, ultimately, this final interpretation is really more about a simple approach that we've just put some limits on it. It doesn't completely eliminate their use. It just limits how useful that they can be. And that's a different approach than what we had 6 weeks ago. The feedback, in addition to I'm not quite sure how this is going to work, one of the things that we were concerned about is just the reality of how golf is played throughout all the different levels, especially when you think about the college game. You might have a golf pro, just a single golf pro that's the committee, and trying to make sure that these answers are consistent. What is an indicative line versus what is a specific detailed line, and is it less than 4%? Those are some of the things that we had in the initial interpretation. And as I mentioned, it was a solution that eliminated their use really completely across the board. And this is a different approach to that. It's stepping back a little bit. It's a little bit less of a take them out of their hands completely and more about let's just put some guardrails against this to make sure that mostly what they're doing at is looking at the green, but they're still going to be able to get a little bit of use out of these things.
So to get into some of the specifics, one of the first things you touch on is it's a smaller scale. There's a scale limit involved now. It's 3/8 of an inch to 5 yards. Why that specific area?
Well, that was really the sweet spot. That's what most traditional yardage books have been built around. If you look at yardage books, whether they're from our Open Championship, the RNA's Open Championship, a lot of the PGA Tour books that are not the green books, but the actual yardage books, that's the scale that has been used in a great majority of those. Very few of them actually go beyond that. Maybe if you have a really small green, perhaps it does. But by using that scale, both what could you pack into that scale? Well, you can't pack in that much, and the more you pack in, the less readable it is. That's the usefulness side of things. But it also just fits in line with what's out there now, hoping that not every single book needs to be reissued because most of them are just fine as they are. That's the yardage book side of things.
When it comes down to size limitations, I mean, it, you reference in today's release that you want it to be about pocket size, which is about the size of the traditional yardage book. Was there something unwieldy about seeing professionals out on greens during tournaments drawing out papers that look like textbooks, to be quite frank, versus what you really wanted to see? Maybe that's the yardage book.
Yeah. The answer to that is yes. It's the size limitation is actually also a way to help limit how useful notes can be as well. You know, that's the other side of this. This is a pre-published question. What can someone bring onto the golf course that's been produced for them? And what can they add to that to help them read the green, their notes? And when you think about the size limit, that both limits the size of the green, the scale of the green, but by saying it's this pocket book, essentially, what we've also done there is limited how much notes can help that individual. They're certainly not going to be pulling out the 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper, sometimes larger. And the larger the green, the larger the paper, the more notes you can put on it, the more detail you can have on it. And that's where things started to get really uncomfortable for us and telling golfers pretty much where the ball was going to go before they putted it.
And just to be clear, as far as the hand-drawn and written information, there are no limitations on what a player or a caddy can put into a specific book, correct?
Yeah, and Rex, you really spoke to the limitation that's there, and that's the player and the caddy. We want this to be their sweat equity. We don't want this to be a team. You know, if you want to employ a whole bunch of people to help you figure out where things are going to go, those people are not going to be putting notes in there for you. And that's one of the challenges that we were encountering in the feedback is, well, I'll just have these people put it on a larger piece of sheet of paper. And that we're saying, no, we actually want this to be you, your caddy. That's really what golf is about. And it's not about the resources you have, whether they're pre-produced or they're folks that are helping you out to put those notes in.
And one of the other bullet points that I found fascinating was that there can't be any magnification devices beyond just normal prescription glasses or lenses. Had you or maybe the RNA or anyone at the USGA run into a situation where someone was using something with more magnifying power?
We hadn't, but ultimately what that's looking at is the ability to pre-produce something that's printed on the scale of one, our 5 yards to 3/8 of an inch. You can still pack in a whole lot of detail into that. And if you're able to use a magnifying glass, something beyond what you could regularly get out of reading glasses, you can see something much more detailed than we'd like golfers to be able to see. So the whole limitation there is just saying, look, it's this size, it's this scale, whatever you can see with your naked eye, that's what you can see. And that's really getting back to the guardrails. It's a limitation that we feel is appropriate. We'll continue to monitor it to make sure that we're still there. But at this point, we feel pretty good about what that looks like.
Now, one of the things that was in the original proposal before this went to the feedback period was limitations on the amount of scope. I think 4% was the number that was put on it. That was not in this final interpretation. Why was that taken out?
That was mostly about consistency of rulings in the field, knowing what was 4% if you didn't actually create that book. That was a particular challenge for us when we think about the number of yardage books. Now, this gets back into the question of just, is a yardage book conforming? Less the question of green reading materials. If someone has a yardage book that was produced, they've been using it for 10 years, they may have no clue what that slope number, that detailed slope number is actually indicating. And that's when we got into this, well, boy, maybe that is a little bit too far for us to go at this point. We don't want to take yardage books, the traditional yardage books, out of golfers' hands. We want to really just take a step to say, you need to be able to read your putt by yourself. And so that was something we took a step back from and said, can we put guardrails on this that make a little more sense for the game? Both the casual player that has a yardage book, the professional player that's week in, week out, you know, grinding, wanting to make sure they make every putt. Where can we draw this line? And we felt pretty good about where we ended up without needing to have that 4% number.
Now, this new interpretation goes into effect on January in 2019, but you also point out in the release today that the USGA and the RNA will continue to look at it. Are there any things going down the road that you think would be adjusted in this book that maybe didn't come up this time around?
Well, the areas that we've said we've limited usefulness, if we don't see that it's actually doing that, we would be prepared to take additional steps, because this all ladders up to this question of putting is an essential skill and have we adequately regulated that. And that's what we do as governing bodies. We need to ensure fairness. We need to promote that skill is the dominant factor that is really what leads to success. And if we see that people are being able to, golfers are out there, whether it's the casual golfer or the professional golfer, they're actually winning because they can read greens through a book or an electronic device, we'll be prepared to make another step. And that's really what that last comment is speaking to, is we're going to monitor this and hopefully we've set the limits in the right spot, but if not, we'll continue to act.
Now, this is a little awkward, so I apologize, but you're a member of the rules staff, so maybe I should direct this in another direction. But given the feedback on social media this morning, I guess the one concern that I picked up was, how are you going to police this? And at what point in the process was that brought up, and how do you feel like that was addressed?
Just enforcing this rule of golf.
The new interpretation of the rule, yes.
Yeah, well, we do believe it's actually pretty simple to both understand for a golfer and to apply if you're a referee, if you're on the committee. It's not that difficult to figure out if the scale is 3/8 of an inch to 5 yards. And you have a 30-yard deep green. It's a little bit of math, but you can figure out how deep that green should be on the paper. And if it's larger than that, then that particular yardage book is something that the player could not use to help read a line of putt. Now, if you think about what does a typical golfer, I mean, I was walking around our office, you know, people that weren't deeply involved in this, and have you ever used a yardage book to read a line of putt was a question I was asking a lot of people, and they're like, no. Like, I use the yardage book to figure out how far
I am. Did you find anyone who did use it, just out of curiosity?
No, I didn't. And so that gives us a pretty comfortable position to say, look, that's not what golfers are using this for, unless it's giving them that excessive detail. This is an equipment rule of golf, and those rules are all there. Every single one of those rules is about how you've used it. Did you use it in breach of the rules? And it's not about you simply carrying it. You know, you can carry a rangefinder that has different types of electronics that you're not allowed to use. It's how you use it that would put you in breach. And you can have a yardage book that, in fact, isn't to scale, is perhaps too big, but if you don't use it to read your line of putt, there's no breach, because that's what we're saying. That's where you cross the line. And so we feel good about that part of it. Now, if there is a particular map that somebody comes in with that says this is a little too big, I think, and you're using it, Rex, you've been using it on the course, let's go take it to the pro, they're just going to have to do some simple measurements. And if it's too large of a scale, that's a breach. If it's not, then you're just fine.
And just to clarify, a breach during a competition, what would that result?
So this is 4.3, or today's 14-3, and the first breach would be the general penalty. So match play, you'd lose the hole. Stroke play, you'd get a 2-stroke penalty. The second time that you did it, you would be disqualified. So you get that one bite at the apple, one kick at the can the second time through. It would be the worst.
And you mentioned this a little bit, but looking ahead, I think yardage books would be the next thing if you look at how detailed and how much of a business it has become, specifically on the PGA Tour. Is there anything that's going, can you envision anything down the road that would make the USGA and the RNA take a harder look at those devices, at just normal yardage books and the information that's being available in them, and maybe make a similar interpretation?
Well, Rex, this does apply both to green books and to yardage books, but the effect on yardage books is negligible. Most yardage books have greens that either fit this or are way, way smaller of scale. So we're not worried about those. That's where we've set limits to say, look, if you want to carry a book around, whether it's a green book or a yardage book, and you wanted to use that book to read your line of putt, this is the scale limit. This is the size limit. We don't see that being a factor, especially now that this is in place. You know, we've been working with, we reached out to manufacturers that create these materials, wanted to learn more, how are you doing it? We reached out to players, how are you using these materials? And this is something that ultimately we feel is, it's saying, okay, your yardage books are fine, but those green reading materials that go beyond this scope, those are not okay. And that's where we've determined at this point, that's where we're going to draw the line.
And finally, I had a chance to talk with a lot of tour players this year about it, or at least during the 6-week feedback period. And I was really amazed at the vast majority of players were against its use, that they, a lot of them only used it because they felt like everyone else was and they should use it as well. Is that what you ran into during this process, where it seems like most of the top-level players were all for getting rid of them as long as everyone wasn't using them?
Yeah, that's the same thing we heard. It's where we've drawn the line, we feel good that it's going to certainly limit their usefulness. But the other side of this is players spoke to us loud and clear that, hold on, my notes? No, don't touch my notes. I've been working on those for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, or somebody that's newer, quite a bit less, but they're very important to those golfers. That's their hard work. That's their sweat equity. And this, what this interpretation does is it says, you can have your notes, just don't put them on big sheets of paper where they suddenly become, they have the potential to become de facto green reading materials. And so those are the two sides of this interpretation where we feel pretty good about it. It's the size of that book that you're carrying is the scale of the green. That's it. Everything else, have at it. Do what you want.
Thanks for watching this Golf Channel podcast presented by Topgolf. And Craig, thank you for being with us.